Hello, everyone, and welcome to the fifth episode of Murder Monday on Late Night Crimecast. I'm your host, Robin Steffens, and every month on a random Monday, I will do a Murder Monday podcast in which I discuss psychopaths, serial killers, mass murderers, and more. Now, if you can recall, last week's episode, we discussed the Groney family murders and abductions. If you have not yet listened to that episode, I highly recommend you do in order to get a better understanding of who I'm going to be talking about today. The Groney family case was so interesting to me because not only were there news articles, books, and videos discussing this tragedy, but also there was a blog created by none other than Joseph Duncan himself. The man who committed those heinous crimes also documented everything in his blogs, which served more to him as a diary. He detailed what he did to the Groney family and what he did to others before them. He also admitted to crimes that he had not really been connected to, or at least officially convicted of. And for that reason, I thought it would be interesting to kind of extend last week's episode into this one. So today, we will be discussing Joseph Edward Duncan III. Joseph Edward Duncan III was born on February 25, 1963, to his mother Lillian Duncan and his father Joseph Edward Duncan Jr. He was one of five children, and I believe he was the second youngest. Joseph was born in Tacoma, Washington, but his father was in the army, so the family, they didn't stay in one place for long. Now, when discussing his childhood, there were different versions floating out there. So first, let me speak from his brother's point of view. His brother Bruce stated in an interview that they were a normal military family, and normal to them was always being on the move, picking up every year or two and starting over. Bruce said they did this throughout their childhood until their father retired in Tacoma sometime in their teens. And after that, they were just your typical teenagers. They went to school, church, and they were even involved in the Boy Scouts. Things were fine for them. That was until their parents got a divorce in 1979. Around this time, Joseph was 15 or 16, so the divorce was a huge life-changing event. And not too long after the parents' divorce, sometime in 1980, Joseph was convicted of raping a 14-year-old boy at gunpoint. And it looks like this wasn't the first crime he actually committed, because it's said that his first recorded sex crime was in 1978. It took place in his hometown of Tacoma, Washington, when he was 15 years old. And similarly to the case that he was convicted of, he had raped a 9-year-old boy at gunpoint. The year after that first rape, he also stole a car. And so he was then sent to Disland's Boys Ranch in Tacoma. This ranch was for delinquent boys. Boys with behavioral issues, boys facing substance abuse, things like that. And side note, I actually did some research on that ranch, and it turns out that there were allegations of abuse, like sexual abuse, at the ranch, stemming from the 1980s to the 1990s. So basically around the exact time that Joseph would have been at the ranch is when the abuse is said to have maybe started or have happened. But if you actually read the blogs that he posts, or that someone posts for him, I should say, Joseph says that he was not abused while he was there, but he did have a sexual interaction with an older man not working at the ranch during his duration of his time there. And in his blog, he details this all rather explicitly. I'll probably discuss his blogs in greater detail on my Patreon, but for today, I'm going to keep it PG. Let's just say his experience there really influenced his behavior later in life. But I'm getting so far ahead of myself. Let's go back to what we were talking about before. Joseph, he had started to exhibit extremely alarming behavior from the get-go. He was committing felonies at such a young age, and he had already begun what would be a life of crime. So he was convicted of raping that 14-year-old boy and was sentenced to prison for a total of 20 years, which would be suspended after completing a sexual psychopath treatment program at the state mental hospital near Tacoma. During this time, Joseph had to see therapists and doctors to kind of get to the root of the horrific crimes that he had committed. So Joseph told them basically that he had molested other children prior to being caught for the crime he was serving time for, and that he had bound and sexually assaulted upwards of like 13 boys. And as an explanation, Joseph told prison therapists that he suffered abuse at home, including incest. He was basically trying to say that the abuse made him that way, but his brother Bruce totally refutes that account. He says that he was not abused and he didn't see anyone in the household being abused. Now, like I said before, there were different versions of his childhood floating around. Well, his sister, Sherry Cox, she says that they had endured horrific abuse during their childhood by their mother. While their father was deployed, she alleges that all of the siblings were beaten by their mother and that their mother was like super religious, crazy. She would attend church obsessively and just, you know, act like a crazy woman. As for the abuse that she says that Joseph endured, she stated that he would never fight back against their mother. She stated that even if they did fight back, they would just get a worse beating anyway, so he would do nothing about it. Now, I have no idea what version of his childhood is real. I mean, when you look at the history of serial killers, psychopaths, and the like, they usually endured an extremely abusive childhood. They usually have suffered from mental, physical, or emotional abuse to a severe level. And it's either that, or they may have felt abandoned or alone. They were abandoned or alone. They may have been bullied severely. So there's so much to take into account with both versions being offered by his siblings. His sister, Sherry, she did leave home at 17, which leads me to believe that she possibly did not have a good relationship with the parents. I'm thinking that either she was telling the truth and the reason she left home at such a young age is because of the abuse, or it's completely possible that she was just a misbehaving, rebellious child that wanted to run away from home. Either way, the situation is not unheard of. Also, if their mother was this crazy religious person, it would make sense because Joseph himself would go into extremely religious ramblings. He does this in his blog, so I can really see the connection. Whether or not his mother abused them, her being religious could explain some of his blog writings or his blog posts. I just have no idea why Bruce would have a totally different account of what happened in the household during their childhood. Like, what would be the benefit for him to saying that Joseph was lying as well as his sister? I mean, take from their statements what you will. Their mother, she was never able to be reached for comment, so there's really nothing to go on there. But I will say that Bruce, he made his statements soon after Joseph was caught for the crimes committed against the Groney family, while his sister kind of made her statements closer to trial and, you know, to use basically as testimony for Joseph. In his favor, of course, as the defense was trying to use, his past abuse to leverage a lighter sentence. I mean, in his own blog posts, Joseph says he does not remember any kind of abuse. He says that his mother doted on him and that his older sisters were jealous of him and often made him feel alone and rejected. But this is also the same man who allegedly said he was abused and subject to incest while he was in custody. Also a man who is at the best a manipulator and liar, and at the worst a serial killer and child molester. So yeah, like I said, take from that what you will. That's what I was able to gather about his life before he went to prison the first time. After he was convicted when he was 16, he was sentenced to 20 years in prison, as I said before, but he only served 14 years and got out on parole in 1994. I can only imagine how hard things were for him in prison being that young. I'm kind of back and forth between convicting young offenders as adults because honestly, kids aren't fully developed and you have to take that into account. But for kids that commit crimes like murder and rape, it's really hard for me to look at it as them being able to function normally in society. The biggest issue with the criminal justice system, and there are a lot of issues, is that there are just no real rehabilitation programs. So I feel like children, especially that are serving sentences as adults, are basically put in even worse positions. We can't expect them to come out of prison as better human beings, and Joseph is no exception. He was put through treatment, but clearly that didn't work because he came out of prison a lot worse, and instead of committing only rapes, he slowly but surely started to commit murders. After being released on parole in 1994, it seemed as if Joseph held back from committing crimes. But it wasn't long until he was back at it again. In 1996, he was arrested, this time for possession of marijuana. His terms of parole had new restrictions, but he was released a few weeks later. Unfortunately, because of this release, he went on to commit more heinous crimes. July 6, 1996, two little girls went missing. Sammy Jo White, age 11, and her sister, Carmen Cubias, age 9, disappeared after leaving the motel they were staying at in Seattle sometime before 11 p.m. They had gone out to get cigarettes at a nearby restaurant for their older brother. At the time, police did not know whether the girls had run away or whether they were victims of foul play. On February 10, 1998, the remains of Sammy Jo and Carmen are found by a homeless person. The medical examiner says the girls probably were killed very soon after they disappeared. And so, actually, Joseph had admitted to killing these girls, but those weren't the only murders he committed around that time. He abducted and killed 10-year-old Anthony Martinez in Riverside County, California. This was in 1997. He had decided that he was pretty much angry at the world at this point. At many times in his blog, he refers to taking revenge, sometimes for being locked up, sometimes for being repressed, sometimes to just take back power that he felt was stolen from him. So he decided that he was going to become a fugitive and leave Washington. So the first place he headed to was California, and he had a clear plan that he wanted to abduct, rape, and murder a child. So when he got to California, he immediately started looking for a child to do these horrible things to. And he first spotted a group of children outside playing not too far from their home. He enticed them to come near him because he stated that he was looking for his missing cat. After the boys came near him, he got out of his car and pretended to be looking in the bushes and told them he would pay them if he helped them find his cat. They did, and these children, I mean, they were very suspicious of him, but they kept their distance and still helped. So when Joseph felt like it was the right moment, he ended up pulling out a knife and grabbing one of the boys. He put the boy in his car, and this was Anthony, and he drove him to an isolated area where he molested the boy and then killed him by striking him in the head with a large rock several times. Due to the crime scene photos, it is believed that the boy was still alive when Joseph had left the scene. Joseph had duct taped his mouth and hands, but the duct tape had appeared to have been ripped off from the mouth in the crime scene photos. Anthony Martinez had been left naked and wounded in the desert to die. Both of the cases had gone cold. It was not found out until after Joseph was caught in 2005 for the Groney abductions and murders that he was involved in killing the two girls and the young boy. But leading up to the Groney murders and abductions, there was still a lot going on and a lot of crimes that he was committing. And it's still really debated whether he is in connection to many similar crimes that happened in the states he had been traveling through during that time period. But there are a few known things about what he was doing between the murder of Anthony Martinez and his attack on the Groney family. So first, he was traveling everywhere pretty much. He was actually arrested in Kansas in 1997 for violating his terms of parole. This was just for violating parole and not for any of the murders he committed. No one knew about those yet. So from 1997 to July 14th, 2000, he was in prison just for his parole violation. He was released after that for good behavior, and then he took the initiative to move to Fargo, North Dakota. It's really unknown what he was doing then, and there's just a few years with not much documented, but it comes up that in March of 2005, Joseph is charged with the July 3rd, 2004 molestation of two boys at a playground in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. On April 5th, 2005, he appeared before a judge who set bail at $15,000. Joseph's friend actually ended up helping him post bail. And if you listened to my last episode, you know where I'm getting to. After that, Joseph skipped bail and disappeared. A federal warrant was issued for his arrest, but by then, it was already too late. He had already moved on to a different state and to different targets. He would not too long after commit the crimes against the Groney family, which I'm not going to go over again. Like I said, you can listen to that episode for yourself. But if you already know what happened, he of course got caught. Duncan was convicted by three courts. An Idaho District Court for the kidnapping and murders of Brenda and Slade Groney and Mark McKenzie. The United States District Court for the District of Idaho for the kidnapping of Shasta and Dylan Groney. The murder of Dylan Groney. And then he was also convicted in a California Superior Court for the kidnapping and murder of Anthony Martinez. He was not even convicted of all the other crimes he had committed, which is really sad, but I mean, he is currently alive and he's on federal death row. He has tried to appeal his triple death conviction to no avail. So guys, there's actually so much more information on this case that I want to share, but I created a Patreon, so I'm going to start posting all the extra video and audio files I make about this case on there. I need to get started somewhere. I haven't really advertised my Patreon anywhere yet, but if you've made it this far and are still listening, you are a true fan and definitely need to check it out. I haven't posted anything on there yet, but I do plan on making posts very soon, starting with this case specifically. I'm going to, of course, let you guys really decide what you want to see on Patreon on either tier, but I'm going to start with this case because there's just so much information that I really want to share with you guys and that I want to discuss further. I have no idea how the blog posts by Joseph are being put out there, but I find it mildly fascinating that he keeps it updated. There is a post in there from this month. So the posts, they're rather long. It takes a while to read, but it's pretty sick what goes on in his mind and how he is able to just kind of detail all these horrible things he did to people. But yeah, this is not the last you guys will be hearing of this from me. So check out my Patreon and stay tuned for updates. Thank you guys so much for listening and make sure to tune in this Thursday for another episode. How exciting. Until next time, guys. Bye.